It's a pleasure to be here. A great privilege to finally meet you all in person. So yes, I'm going to talk about basically just a rehash of what I already talked about, but that's okay. Maybe with some slight tweaks. So I'm going to talk about improving 3D codes for bias noise. And so first of all, people say that, oh yeah, so quantum computing is the future, right? But we have this big problem called noise, which means that we can't actually achieve it without error correction. So right now we're in like the so-called NISC period of noisy intermediate, sorry, not noisy intermediate scale quantum devices. But to actually get to real like useful quantum computing, useful in quotes, we'd actually need some kind of error correction. And in general, let's just get ourselves on one page first. So qubits are the basic units of quantum information. It's like a bit, but it's quantum in the sense that you can have zero and one and superpositions of zeros and ones. And in this slide, I'm going to use red for X and blue for Z, so which are the Pauli operators, which do the usual Pauli things. And however, when we look at operators, we only need to care about whether operators commute or anti-commute. And if they're different, they generally anti-commute. And if they're the same, they generally commute. That's the usual rule with Paulis, which is nice. And so the most basic form of error correction, which only corrects against one type of error in this case, is to basically just repeat the same thing over and over again over many qubits. And we call this the repetition code. It has some really amazing properties despite its simplicity, which we shall get to and exploit soon. So suppose you have one qubit and you want to encode it into three qubits. In this case, you would use the states 0, 0, 0, and 1, 1, 1 as your code states. And you encode that state as that, on the left as the one on the right. And the way the logical operators work is that we want to still be able to do these quantum operations. And so we can do them pretty much analogously as we would as if we were one qubit. And so in this example, let's consider what happens when we have an X error occurring, that is a bit flip. And so in this case, well, a bit flip occurs somewhere. But then what we do, the trick is to measure these so-called stabilizers, which are basically just parity check measurements, which check whether two adjacent bits have been flipped or not. And so in this case, there are only two. So ZZI and IZZ, okay, which means ZZ here and ZZ there. And if you measure these, you'll find that it will anti-commute with the first one, but not the second one. And because of the overlaps, right? So if it overlaps, that's anti-commute, that's negative one. And so therefore, you can deduce that the syndrome occurred on the first one. And in doing so, you can then consider that to be the more likely error. Because although this one also produces the same error, this one is much less likely because it's, probability, right? So it's more likely to have like lower weight errors, as they call it. And so if you can do this for, yeah, and this is, if you don't believe they both produce the same error, this is the proof, okay? But that doesn't matter. But in general, you measure these pairs of stabilizers, and then you get either plus one or minus one for either one or the other. And then based on this, you can have a lookup table for which you can apply the right correction to it. And if you were to do this, then that's great because it means that you can do everything except that when it doesn't work, you get an uncorrectable error and you will get a logical error. So even though it's an error, at least it's still in the code space. So at least it's still a valid, like, logical qubit. So it'll always bring us back to the code space. And so this kind of algorithm, which takes these measurements of these parity check operator measurements and tells you the right correction to apply, is basically called a decoder because it decodes the code. And the stabilizers, in general, stabilize the code space in the sense that if you apply this onto a logical operator, it doesn't do anything, which is interesting because we can generalize this notion. And the stabilizers must commute in the sense that if you do them in different order, it shouldn't matter. And yes, so that's pretty much it. So if there is a so if there's an error and there are many valid errors, so I mean very many valid possible errors, then you basically just correct them as is. And there are also many valid corrections because applying a stabilizer onto the logical state doesn't do anything. So which means you have a lot of freedom to move around. And so for example, for this syndrome, you'd be able to apply lots and lots of different valid corrections, but we only need to pick one and just one will do. But now we talk about noise models. So far we've been assuming that if you have a qubit, then either with some probability p, you get an x error, and with some other 1 minus p probability, you get nothing happening, which is good. And we've been assuming that noise is independent, identically independently distributed, or IID as we call it. So the probability of the x occurring anywhere is pretty much the same. And the other kind of error you can have is a z error, which is a phase split, which is the same thing, but with some probability p, you get a z error. And so if you have this, you can use these kind of stabilizers instead, XX errors. But because these commute with the X's, you won't be able to detect the X errors, which is pretty useless. And so what do we do? But first, let's talk about the different kinds of noise. So we can also have X, Y, and Z noise all together with different probabilities happening. And in this case, you would have different probabilities occurring for each. And we call this bias noise in the sense that it's biased towards a particular type of noise. So for example, the bit flip is basically infinitely biased X noise, and the phase flip is infinitely biased Z noise. And we can kind of like show this on a triangle. It's either X, Y, or Z, or somewhere in between. And this is the most general Pauli channel you can get. And when you measure bias, we have to quantify it in some way. And we quantify it in the sense that if it's on the corner of the triangle, which means like pure X, pure Z, or pure Y, we call that so-called infinitely biased. And if it's somewhere in the middle, we call it unbiased. And so we have this eta quantity, which is just the ratio between how much you have one type versus the other type. So in general, you have a code, you have a noise model, and you have a decoder. And you put those together and you get some probability of succeeding in decoding. And in general, you wouldn't want to have just three qubits. You wouldn't have many, many qubits because ideally, and that means you can define a family of codes. And if you have a family of codes that has increasing size, then you would, actually, no, before we even get there, for a given correction, you would assume that if you were to apply the correction, you'd do better than not doing anything. And so you would plot on the x-axis the noise rate applied, and on the y-axis the effective noise rate, or the logical noise rate, as we call it. And if you had many, many like more qubits, like if you made this repetition code as big as you want, what you find is that below some threshold, which is 50%, you can basically suppress the noise arbitrarily low, provided you have a sufficiently large number of qubits applied, which is nice, which means that you just simply need more. Yes. So not too complicated, hopefully. And you can see, yep, 50% is the threshold of the repetition code. And so yep, that's in general, it's actually more like a code family gives you a threshold along with noise models and everything else. So in the toric code, however, it's a kind of generalization, because remember that the repetition code is pretty useless in correcting the other type of error. So if you can only correct X errors, then you can't correct Z errors. But here, the trick is to basically move to 2D, in which case, instead of having pair checks, you have four body checks. So you check X, 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 and Z, Z, Z on faces and vertices, or adjacent to faces and adjacent to vertices. And you would have an L by L grid on a torus, essentially. And you can check that these two commute, so that's one thing. You can measure them whatever order you like, because whenever they overlap, it's always a pair of them which overlap. And you can check that when you compose these, you always get like these loops, which are contractible. And so the stabilizer group, which is like basically like every possible combination of stabilizers you want, it's basically just a set of all contractible loops on the torus. And the same thing goes for the dual, which is the Z vertex operators. And yep, you can apply them together and you get more loops. But note that when you apply every single one of them together, what you end up with is, well, actually, they're not all independent. So you have like one extra. And in fact, when you take the product of every single face operator, what you get is the identity. And that will be very interesting. And this is what we call a so-called symmetry, in the sense that a symmetry implies a conservation law. And in this case, the symmetry here is that if you take the product of every face operator, you get nothing. But you get a conservation law, which is when the number of excitations, or which means stabilizers you measure to be bad, is always even. So they always come in pairs, which is important because it allows us to decode it. Same thing applies for the Z. But first let's talk about what the logical operators are. So those are the ones which are contractible loops, but there are also the uncontractable ones, and these are the so-called logical operators. So, which is nice, because it's like all topological and stuff. Yeah, but yeah, so in general, you have like, you know, 2L² qubits, and you'd have 2L² - 2 stabilizer operators, and you'd have 2 encoded logical qubits. And so when you have an error, as I said, what you get is you will measure the stabilizers and you will find that, oh, these two are bad, they anti-commute, and they occur in pairs. And so that's interesting, okay. So that means the errors always occurs in pairs, and that's a consequence of that symmetry we were talking about. So you can have loops this way, loops that way. But then what you do is you just have to match all the pairs. And because if you match all the pairs, and when you join them together, even if it's a different loop, it's a different path, you would get a closed loop, which is a stabilizer, and a stabilizer doesn't do anything on the logical state. And so, however, sometimes you get uncorrectable errors when they're too far away, and then you join them together and you get like a non-trivial loop on the torus. And in this case, we say we'd have a logical error. And that means you can also do the same for the Z-type operators, and so Z errors, and you measure the phases instead. So now we can correct both X and Z operators, which is great, but there's a catch. The threshold is no longer 50%, okay, which is not very nice. It's something like 10% or something. It's like pretty dismal, okay. And in fact, if it's Z noise, it's 11%, and X noise, it's 11%. But interestingly, though, for Y noise, it's 50%. Interestingly, okay. So perhaps there's a trick we can do, so that if we know in our experiment we have Z noise being dominant, perhaps there's a way we can get it to have 50% threshold. And so there's a trick here, which is to, instead of making the faces XXX and all the vertices ZZZ, what we do is we make them XZZX, like this. You can still check that they commute, and you can still check it has all the other properties, but if you do the simulation, you find it has a 50% threshold. Okay, well, why is that, right? I guess we'll find out. Well, the reason is because the symmetry is now no longer that when you take the product of these operators all like together, you get one. In fact, if you take all these operators along a line, what you find is that you will get the identity relative to Z, in the sense that you get, like, if you take all these operators along a line, you will get Z only, for example, for one of them. And you can exploit this to basically turn this into a set of repetition codes which can be decoded independently. Okay. Well, that probably didn't make sense so much, but yeah, it has the same properties as the usual Tory code. But now we want to generalize this to 3D. And you may ask, well, why do you want to go 3D? Well, it's because there are some nice properties of the 3D code, like having a transversal non-Clifford gate, if you want to get, which is fault tolerant, and single shot error correction for the Z sectors. But yeah, these are just buzzwords for now. But yeah, believe me, it's useful somehow. And then you'd ask, what's the threshold for this one? Is it 50%? Well, definitely not. Okay, it's like, it's a pretty bad. It's like 3% or something. But the good thing is that you can get these, like if you have X error, you can still correct them by matching pairs. So this is still something you can still do, which is nice. Exactly the same thing, because when you match them, you get these loops, and these loops are still stabilizer operators. And then you can also, there was also like, basically combos of Z errors, which form these domains, and these like loops around these domains are basically all like bad detections, a minus one syndromes. And you can decode this using a cellular automaton, apparently. Yeah, which is nice. It's, you just use this rule. Basically, if you see two faces bad, then you apply it, you do that. And if you see two faces bad like that, you do that. And so on. There's a lookup table, right? You do this on every single cell and magically it will correct itself. Well, not magically, it's provably correctable. Yeah. So it just follow a rule. So you don't even have to look it up. And so, yeah, the question is, can we somehow increase the threshold from this dismal 3% to 50%? Okay, at least for bias noise. Well, the answer is, oh, yes, you can. And this is how you do it. What you do is you replace these operators like this. You basically just replace all the everything along the x-axis. You replace the x's with z's and you replace the z's with x's. If you do this, you can check it's pretty much the same, except that when you apply z noise to this, it has a 50% threshold, yeah, under pure z noise. And because of that symmetry we were talking about, the pairs always occur along lines. And so you can just simply match along the lines and you just simply have a bunch of repetition codes and you can decode repetition codes to 50% threshold. And that's nice. So, yes. And in particular, the reason you get those pairs is if you apply products of these, like along a line, what you get is basically an operator which has no x's because all the x's cancel out if you apply these along a line. And so you only have z's and z's commute with z's. And so that's nice. And that leads to a 50% threshold. Yeah, you can also, you don't have to deform it along the x-axis. You can deform it along the z-axis as well if you like. Yeah, same effect. And the way you decode it is, it's a bit tricky, but basically you first match the verticals like along those lines, and then you can have these toric codes which you can decode. But the threshold is still 50% if you think about it properly. Yes, you can also repeat this for finite bias, and it turns out that if you use that sweet match decoder, yeah, I know it's 21% here with the sweet like that or cellular automaton decoder, but you can still improve this to 50% using a better decoder. But this effect actually holds like quite early, as in like you would get pretty high thresholds even at finite bias. So even if it's not like pure Z noise, but even if it's like mostly Z noise, you'll still get a pretty big improvement over the like vanilla version of the code. And so in summary, you can basically just convert the 3D toric code and you can do just a slight modification to it and you can still get the same advantages as the XZZX code. Yeah, and which is nice. And so in the future, we're going to basically use better decoders like the BPOSD decoder, which is belief propagation and ordered statistics. And yeah, it's a very common way of decoding like classical codes. It still works with quantum codes with some modifications. We can also consider like the optimal thresholds for like if you use a different, like the best possible decoder, which you can compute using some StatMech mappings. And we can also consider noisy measurements as well, where like the measurements aren't perfect. Sometimes they give you the wrong answer. And we can also consider your other codes, like the rhombic code and fracton codes and other interesting codes. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, so thank you for listening. Yeah.
Any questions?
Okay, I guess, yeah, it was so confusing, there were no questions. Okay, all right. Oh, yes, please.
Can you comment more on why the toric code model is different from the XZZX model? Because it seems to me that just change the labels of one direction.
Yes, you change the labels of the stabilizers, but not the labels of the noise.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, yeah, noise is still, yeah. So, yes, if that makes sense.
Comment more on some 3D model, exactly social models that involve thresholds. Are they useful?
Yeah, like certainly. This is like model called the so-called X cube model, which I forgot to paste the picture in because it was too last minute. But the same principle applies. Yes, it turns out you can do the same, like a similar kind of deformation, and you will still get a 50% threshold. Yeah. Yeah. Which is nice. So, yes.
All right. Sorry. Maybe if you go back to the first slide where you showed this threshold, showed it was 50%, and then, but later it was bad. It was worse.
Oh yeah, for the repetition code, yeah, 50%, yes.
Exactly, what is the threshold? So if you could...
Oh, yes. Oh, the threshold is this point in the middle where like is 50% for here, but where like if you apply, if you use a big enough number of qubits, you'll eventually get your error rate as low as you like. Yeah. So it means that like below, if you're, as long as your error rate applied to each qubit is below this threshold, you can get it as low as you want, just by simply having more, qubits.
I get it. But like, if, for example, you have an error rate very bad, or like 60%, this code wouldn't get you, like, it wouldn't correct.
Yeah, it wouldn't correct, So like,
You would think it's
Okay. Yeah, so like, if you have like an experiment which has a 10% noise and your threshold was only 6% or something, then it's pretty useless, your code,
Okay.
So, the aim is to get the threshold as high as possible for the theorists, and for the experimentalists, the aim is to get the noise rate as low as possible. Yeah. And so eventually they'll meet up someday.
Nice.
It's nice to have 50%, yeah. Yes.
A very basic question. You mentioned contractible.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Oh, contractible is in like, if you deform this, you will eventually deform it down to a point. But whereas like deform means like applying these base operators, over and over again to get like bigger and bigger loops. Yeah.
So is there any connectors on the same way the backwards that you see if they're connected?
Oh yeah, it has to be connected, like in a closed loop. Yeah. But there are, because it's a torus, there are some loops which you can't contract. No matter how you apply these spaces, you won't be able to get it down to like identity, the point.
Awesome. That's
thank you. All right. Thank you.